members, we don't have a quorum yet, but in the interest of getting started, we had a little problem with the tape machine, or we would have started earlier, but the tape machine is operating at least on a regular non-CD basis, so I want to get started, and we will officially convene the meeting once we have a quorum. We have three items of business today. The first is we're going to go over some state agency performance reporting. And I wanted to do this just so that people understand that we have this out here, particularly fiscal chairs, I think, should be aware of this and some of the reports and performance reports that are out there with some of the state agencies. We're then going to finish up Bill Marks's review of the state budget, taking the non-general fund items today. And finally, we're going to have a presentation on debt management, something I had wanted to do 2 years ago but didn't, just because of the fact that we had such a crazy schedule starting out then with the potential for unallotments and the deficiency we had in the budget, is I wanted to try to go over briefly each of the different finance committees that we had. And since those finance bills will be coming here eventually, it seems to me that people should be given at least some background about that general area since they'll be voting on it. And we obviously all can't be on all finance committees and attending them, so I thought that this, at least for Ways and Means members, would give people a little bit of an overview of each committee. And since a bonding bill is probably the first finance-related bill that we'll get, it seemed to me to make sense to start out with the bonding committee today. So, members, that's why we're starting out with the debt management overview. It's possible we may go past our 2:15 normal deadline, but, of course, we'll be out of here by 3 o'clock. I do not plan on reconvening after our session today. With that, let me welcome Jay Strobel. Jay, thanks for coming, and please give us your presentation. Members, if you've got questions, please raise your hands.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Ways and Means Committee, my name is Jay Strobel from the Office of Strategic Planning and Results Management in the Department of Administration. Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to present today. I'm here to present on the Cabinet Department's performance reporting efforts, specifically the Department Results website. You should all have copies of the website's homepage and an example from the Department of Employment and Economic Development. I'll be going through these pages in more detail following a brief overview of the state's results management efforts. Results management is the overarching process of defining organizational goals and strategies, allocating resources, human resources, financial resources, technology resources, etc., to achieve those goals, and then the ongoing measurement, reporting, and regular review of performance towards those goals. The results management effort began roughly 3 years ago with the goals of enhancing state government accountability, being more transparent with citizens on state government performance information, informing executive and legislative branch decision makers on performance, on department performance, educating government leaders and managers on various results management topics and tools by organizing results presentations. For example, we've organized presentations this past fall on a workforce planning toolkit developed by the Human Resources Directors Partnership and the Department of Employee Relations. This past summer, we held a workshop on how to develop good performance measures. And next week, the Pollution Control Agency, Minnesota Department of Transportation, and the Department of Revenue will be sharing their internal performance reporting processes. Additional goals for this effort are creating a results-oriented culture within departments, informing and promoting good management practices in areas that contribute to improved results, such as workforce planning, strategic planning, etc. And finally, the ultimate goal is to drive improved results, enhance efficiencies, and reduce costs. If you please refer to the Department Results website handout that's in your packets, this is the primary communication tool that we use to report on the department's goals, strategies, and performance measures. As you'll notice, on the home page is organized by subject area and also by department, and is also searchable as well. I brought Deed as an example today. But also, before getting into Deed's website, I'd like to note that every department's leadership team went through the process of creating the goals, strategies, and measures for their department results website. And what we've done is that we've asked every department, every cabinet department, to identify their 3 to 5 priority goals. Deeds, for example, are create high-quality new jobs in Minnesota by promoting business creation, expansion, and relocation, The second goal is strengthening Minnesota's economy by connecting businesses and workers, and so on and so forth. They had four goals in total. Then we asked every department to identify 3 to 5 performance measures for every goal, focusing on outcome measures, customer satisfaction measures, and efficiency measures. For example, for Deed's first goal, their four measures are employment growth, Minnesota and U.S. manufacturing export growth rates, Minnesota jobs created, enhanced, or retained as a result of Deed assistance, and private investment leveraged. We strongly encourage the departments to use targets and comparative data where that's available as well. For each goal, we ask every department to provide supportive text outlining why the goal is important, what strategies they have in place to achieve their goal, and how is their progress to date. There's also links to related information. For example, in Deed's first goal, they provide links to the JobZ program, links link to the export, and links to their homepage. There's also an opportunity for citizens to provide feedback using the feedback button as well. Some of the practical applications of this work are, for the governor's office and department leadership, the semi-annual update of this information allows it to be a great management tool to assess progress on the department's priority goals. For department management and staff, the regular review of goals and programs help recognize success and early detection when programs are not meeting expectations. For legislators, the website is a great resource as you consider department budgets and assess overall performance of the departments. For citizens, the website provides a high-level overview of department priorities, strategies, and results. Mr. Chairman, thank you again for the opportunity to present this information, and thank all of you for your support of results-based government. Again, I'd like to encourage all of you to use this information, and the website can be found in the last page of the handout. But before I address any questions that you might have, I want to put in a plug for a report titled Legislating for Results. Bill Marks was one of the primary contributors to this NCSL report. The report provides legislative actions for obtaining and using performance or results information. If you're interested in this, in a copy of this report, you can either contact me or Bill, and we can set you up with a copy. I'd be happy to take any questions at this point.
All right. At this point, I'm going to have a few questions for you in a minute, Mr. Strobel, but we do have a quorum. Let me officially convene the meeting and recognize there is a quorum. Ask the clerk to note the roll. Members, we have the minutes of the last meeting before us of January 19th. Are there any corrections, additions, changes? Representative Biskins moves approval of the minutes of January 19th. Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the minutes being approved, signify saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Oh, the motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It doesn't have to be right now, but I just want to have a placeholder in our committee's discussion for the rules of the committee. We discussed those earlier, and then on Friday they were emailed to all of us. And I'm hoping that's not a done deal, that we all will have another chance to discuss them, because that sentence that Representative Clark brought up and many of us expressed concern about, I noticed, is still here, unaltered.
Well, Representative Brown, let's bring that up, but why don't I finish with Mr. Strobel, since he's here and he probably has other things to do, and as soon as I'm done and people are done asking Mr. Strobel questions, we'll go on to that. Mr. Strobel, I guess one question I'd have for you is the goals that are set out, you talked about the departments setting the goals. Do the department heads set the goals? Do the Pawlenty administration set the goals? Who actually sets the goals?
Mr. Chairman, each of the departments go through their own sort of unique process of establishing what their 3 to 5 priority goals are. So the departments themselves, typically the leadership of the departments, the commissioners and the deputies and their other leadership people involved in the department.
Is the Pawlenty administration involved in that process much?
In the actual goal setting, no. They've left it up to the discretion of the departments for the most part.
And what about the measures that are used to define whether or not the goals are being achieved? Does that then come out of the department too, or is that something that the administration is involved in?
Mr. Chairman, the departments do develop those lists of measures, 3 to 5 measures for every goal. It's part of my job and responsibility to help provide some suggestions on those performance measures, whether or not they're good measures to measure progress towards those goals or not. Again, because we're trying to focus specifically on outcome measures, customer satisfaction measures, and measures of efficiency. So we're trying to focus very much on high-level goals, but it definitely is developed from the departments.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Strobel, besides the intrinsic I feel good or I feel bad, are there any other incentives tied towards meeting these goals and or consequences for not meeting the goals?
Strobel.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Biskins, the one of the valuable things about the Department Results website is that every 6 months that this information does get updated, and there's an opportunity to evaluate progress towards those goals. And those are that's both done at the department level, and not, then the governor's office also reviews the goals and progress towards those goals.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Strobel, are there any incentives in place to achieve those goals or consequences for not achieving the goals?
Mr. Strobel.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Biskins, incentives are, my guess would be that as individuals, as departments, that they want to achieve those goals to look good. Also, we're talking about the taxpayers' dollars here, so they want to make sure that they're trying to achieve those goals. So those are some of the incentives. But there's no consequences per se for not achieving those goals other than the elimination or the change of the programs.
Mr. Strobel, have you seen these goals change in the last couple of years? I mean, the goals that the departments have, the same goals they had 2 years ago, or have you seen cases where it appears that, you know, maybe one goal is achieved and they're moving on to another one?
Mr. Chairman, the Department Results website underwent a significant, well, not significant, but it, when the Plenty administration came in, it was changed. So the goals that were in place under the Ventura administration weren't necessarily the same goals that are in place today. As departments are beginning to review these, they've all been in place for about a year now. I have noticed that there's been slight tweaks and changes, but we're not far enough down the road to say that there's been dramatic changes to the goals.
And can I ask, is there a process that the agencies use with these goals as they put together their budget? I mean, are the goals related to the budgeting process?
Mr. Chairman, I think each department has their own approach in terms of how these goals align with their budget process and the priorities in assessing their budget.
Okay, and why don't you give us the website again where we can see all the goals and measures for all the different departments.
Sure. The website is on the handout that I provided the last page. It's www.departmentresults.state.mn.us.
Okay. Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, familiar with a little bit of the agency's goal setting, and that when I visit the IRRB building, we got brand new signs all over the place that talk about mission statements and goals and everything else. And Representative Rukavina went to find out exactly what the goal was of the agency. They got posted on it. But my question is, do all the agencies spend a great deal of money putting up signs of what their goals are, and as what that agency did, new signs?
Mr. Strobel.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, there's no requirement that every agency create signs promoting their mission statements and goals that they may choose. So that may be a unique case. On a matter of practice, I think it's good to emphasize the goals and the mission statements of departments. Perhaps there's other more less costly ways of doing that.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Strobel, I don't think it's a unique case. I would like to have at least some kind of more information on that, what the costs are.
Mr. Strobel?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, I'll be able to find that information for you and get back.
That'd be great. Okay. Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd also like to point out some of these goals have really accomplished some significant results. We had testimony the other day from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency where in 2003 they said that less than 10% of their permitting process, either new permits and or reapplications, were occurring in less than 6 months. And their goal was to turn that around to where 90% of their permits would be approved or disapproved within the 6 month or less period of time. And their report to us is that they are now at the 70% mark and well on their way to accomplishing their overall 90% goal of having their processes complete with faster than they've ever historically been. So goal setting along with proper strategies and really commitments from the bottom of the agency all the way to the top has definitely shown significant results. And there was a editorial in the Pioneer Press about 2 weeks ago that was complimenting them on that's the way government should be responding. And I think that we need to let those that have been doing a good job know that it really does produce results to have goals that people can understand and have them all committed to achieving those objectives.
Representative Osmond, I recall that editorial too, and that really does seem to be an outstanding success story in terms of how that has turned around. Mr. Strobel, any other comments or response to Representative Osmond?
Mr. Chair, Representative Osmond, that's a great example of a success story of why this is important to do this type of work.
Representative Clark.
Quick question. Is there any part of the goal setting that involves an evaluation by the public? In other words, speeding up a process may or may not make the public happy or other kinds of goals, in terms of the quality of the service. Mm-hmm. Is there any sort of evaluation that goes along with this from the public?
Mr. Strobel.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, one of the types of measures that we try to emphasize is customer satisfaction, and as you'll notice in the Department of Employment and Economic Development, they do have a customer satisfaction measure or two. Specifically, there's one related to their unemployment insurance program. So I do know that as a point of emphasis that we are trying to get citizen feedback and input on the government programs.
Representative Rocavina.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Since we're on goals and that, maybe, gentlemen, I was out of the room because I went to get the exact language, but there's a sign up at the Iron Range Resource and Rehabilitation Board that the commissioner up there put up, and it's under a title. It says Principles of the Pawlenty Administration, and then there are several, but under Improvement by Innovation, it says we will encourage competition, collaboration, privatization, outsourcing, and increased use of technology and e-government services to improve the work we do. So is that the goal of the Pawlenty administration? One of them is outsourcing and privatization. Is that in your goals, sir?
Mr. Strobel.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, that I'm not familiar with that goal, and my understanding, that's not one of the goals that the Iron Range Resources has designated as part of their department results website.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
I understand this was a goal, a principle of the Pawlenty administration. It wasn't just the Iron Range Resources board or commissioner that was doing this. This was through the Pawlenty administration, and I am curious because we've had certainly an argument at the legislature about outsourcing, but to see it as a principle of the Pawlenty administration, outsource jobs, is kind of puzzling to me. I mean, the privatization I don't agree with, but I would think that most people at this table here on both sides of the aisle wouldn't support outsourcing jobs to be innovative.
Mr. Strobel, this website talks about specific goals by agencies. Is there another set of like overall administration goals or overall administration principles or something that you're aware of?
Mr. Chairman, There, at the beginning of the Plenty administration, there was the development of goals and principles and values. I don't recall the exact language on those, and perhaps that's what Representative Rukavina is referring to.
Okay.
This, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
Representative Tomasoni took a picture of this with his cell phone, and I just left here to get him to read it to me. So the exact wording is under the principles of the Plenty administration, under improvement, a bullet that says improvement by innovation. That is the statement that the Plenty administration evidently stands by.
Well, Representative Rukavina, maybe your cell phone, it sounds to me like they are at least beginning to achieve their technology and innovation goals.
Well, Senator Tomasoni took it, so he may have been choking on the on the picture. I don't know for sure.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Solberg,
I do think that's an important question, though, that Representative Rukavina is asking, and I'd like to know if that is the principles of the Plenty administration that have been listed there. I was absolutely shocked that the IRRB had a sign up that said that the principles of the Plenty administration was to outsource the jobs. We want clarification. Well, we also want to create jobs. We don't want to outsource them to China or other places. We've got enough problems with that.
Well, Representative Colberg, I guess I would say that we should check this website maybe sometime between now and the next meeting. I don't know, according to what Mr. Strobel is saying, if that is part of the IRRB goals, but maybe Mr. Strobel can get us a copy of the other principle and value statements or whatever else isn't particularly department goals that are related to the Plenty administration, and we can pass them out for the next meeting.
Mr. Chairman, that would be very helpful. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Representative Beard.
Mr. Chairman, the question was just answered in the passing this out at the next meeting about this outsourcing stuff. So
All right.
I have no question.
Okay. All right. Well, we will look at this in the next meeting. Members, I guess I just wanted to make sure that people were familiar with this. For those of you who are on finance committees or any committees, realize that these agencies have these goals, they have these performance measures. I think that it's legitimate to ask them how they're doing and achieving their goals, if their goals are the right goals, if the performance measures are the right performance measures, and that they be held accountable to these goals. So I would encourage you to look over the website, members, and familiarize yourself with it. With that, Mr. Strobel, thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Before we go on to Mr. Marks's presentation, Representative Greiling, let me recognize you and we'll talk about rules.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Back when we first went over the rules of this committee, Representative Clark raised the concern about rule number 4, which includes the sentence, "The chair will determine if an amendment to any bill or to any amendment is germane or substantive." Some of us echoed her concerns, and you said that these rules were not final and so forth, and I'm not sure how it was left. But on Friday then, we were emailed these rules, and so now my question comes forward. When are we going to discuss them and have a chance to amend them?
Well, Representative Greiling, I think you'll recall that when I brought them up, I asked people to provide input to me about other suggestions they had for the rules, changes, recommendations in regard to the rules. The way House Rules reads, the rules that are enforced right now, the committee chair has the right and the obligation to decide upon and distribute committee rules. That's what we've done in prior years. As I thought about the meeting that day, no one else got back to me on that issue. In fact, no one got back to me on any other rules issues after that day, and we've had, I think, 2 weeks go by between that time and today. So I thought it was time, since we are starting to process bills. We processed 2 bills last week, that we really ought to get some sort of committee rules in place. And as I looked at the rules that we had here, I felt that they had served us well the last 2 years. They're basically the rules we had the last 2 years. I don't believe I ever ruled any amendment non-germane in the last 2 years. And if you look at the House rules, it specifically gives the chair a right to rule an amendment out of the jurisdiction of the committee if the chair so chooses. And so I felt that in keeping with what is in House rules and the fact that it seemed to work the last 2 years, I'd put that rule in again. I don't really anticipate using it. We didn't use it the last 2 years, but felt I would put it in there. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you, that was your answer at the last meeting as well, and I didn't give you another suggestion other than the one I gave you right in the committee, which was cite that rule that I think is a lot more inclusive of everybody having a chance rather than the chair determining whether or not something is germane, which is nothing that anyone here, at least in the last discussion, recalled any other committee having. And I also expressed the concern that it becomes custom and usage if nobody challenges it and it just stands, and then pretty soon people can say, well, we've had that for the last 10 years. So that's my concern about it. And if I'm the only one that has the concern, we can move on. But it was my understanding other people did as well.
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to say that sentence is consistent with custom and usage. There have been committees that I have been on where the chair has declared amendments to be non-germane to the particular bill before us. So that is consistent. It's all the decisions that occur within a committee are appealable to the floor. And so if the chair oversteps his or her bounds, you can always appeal to the floor on that type of issue. But the chair is the one that has always controlled the germaneness of bills.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rucavina.
Mr. Chair, I have a different historical perspective of that, Chair and Representative Osmond. And I also brought that up when Representative Greiling, I may have brought it up first even about the germaneness. And Representative Osmond, I've been here now in my 19th year. I don't ever remember there being a germaneness rule until recent years, and I don't ever believe I ever saw anyone in a committee ever exercise a germaneness rule since I've been here in 19 years. And I was, actually, I would like, I don't know about yielding, because I'm sure I don't have to ask him to, but I'd like Representative Osmond to tell me just one instance where a committee chair ruled you out of order on germaneness.
Representative Osmond?
Mr. Chair, I'll have to do a little research, but I know I have ruled amendments out of order for germaneness in my committee.
Well, Mr. Chair.
So I can get you the specifics on when that occurred and how that occurred, but I know that it has occurred because I've done it.
Representative Rucavina.
Well, Mr. Chair, my point being that the rules have just changed. I mean, this is the seventh year that Republicans have been in power since I've been here, and maybe they changed under them, but in my prior 12 years in the majority, I never ever saw an amendment ruled out of order because of germaneness in a committee.
Well, Representative Rucavina, I believe it's been going on for at least the last seven years, although perhaps infrequently. I guess before then, I don't, my seniority doesn't go back a great deal before that, so I can't speak to it. But I think that committees have always had the right to rule something out of order if it's out of the jurisdiction of the committee. I don't know how often it's been done, but I think they've always had that right. Representative Klinzing?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize for the voice. I'm struggling with laryngitis. Just to provide a specific example, I did have a bill last year up in Government Ops Committee to which a member brought up an amendment I agreed with, and the chair did rule it non-germane he said it wasn't within the jurisdiction of the committee to make a decision on that. So there are specific examples in which this has happened in the last couple of years.
And members, I'm not trying to do any power grab with this. Again, it was in the rules the last 2 years. House rules specifically give chairs the right to put this in the committee rules. It didn't seem to me unreasonable to keep it in there since it has been in there, since we have the right to put it there. Representative Greiling.
Mr. Chair, Representative Klinzing is referring to is the language in the yellow book, which I don't quibble with at all. I don't think governmental operations would ever complete their work if they tried to do amendments that pertain to other committees. Whether or not it's germane to the committee is different than the chair deciding, regardless of what's germane to the committee, that the amendment is not germane to the bill under consideration. And that's my point. So if I'll go back to where I was before, I would be more than happy if you wanted to repeat the rule that's in the yellow book. But this is, I believe, more than that which is what you have in your own rules. So would the chair consider it a friendly amendment to take out your sentence and put in the sentence that's in the yellow book? And if not, why not?
Well, Representative Greiling, I guess how do you believe... Let me read the sentence that is in the yellow House rules book. It states, an amendment offered in committee must be on a subject that is within the jurisdiction of the committee. Whether an amendment is on a subject that is within the jurisdiction of the committee is a question to be decided by the person chairing the meeting, who may put the question to the committee. Now, I guess as I read that, what do you feel is different about the language we have in the committee rules?
Mr. Chair, as I said, I believe it's because the language that's here sounds like you're deciding if it's germane or not to the bill, whereas the language in the yellow book is deciding whether or not it's germane to the committee. So if we could, I would suggest a friendly amendment just to move us along, because I know we have a long agenda. If the chair will determine if an amendment to any bill or to any amendment is germane to the committee or substantive. If you would insert the words to the committee, I would have no problem with your language.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure if I understand what you're getting at, Representative Greiling, because if the bill isn't germane to this committee, it shouldn't be here in the first place.
Mr. Chair, in the case of governmental operations, for instance, that Representative Cleansing cited, there would be a finite germaneness to the committee that's much narrower than this committee. And that's, I think, what that rule in the House rules is referring to. And that's my concern for the rule that you have here. This is a much broader committee, and therefore many more amendments are germane. And if you, you know, are making those decisions, I think it gives you a lot more authority and decision making beyond the other members of the committee than the yellow book intends.
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe the sentence that you have in the current rules is exactly the way it should be kept. Can you imagine if we did not have this, or the chair does not have the authority, I would end up with in my committee, if this is to occur, or if those bills eventually end up here, that how are you going to keep issues that are germane to the committee but separate from the wrong bill? For example, I would end up with DNR appropriation suggestions being put into the MPCA bill or vice versa. I mean, those are the types of things that the chair has to discern. Is this appropriate for this bill? It's not just what's appropriate before the committee. This particular committee is especially critical that the chair has this discretion, because almost everything is germane to this committee. It's not, may not be germane or appropriate for individual bills that will be before this committee.
Representative Mariani, I've got next on the list.
Mr. Chair, I'm remembering last year we had a bill in one committee where there were multiple sections of it, and the chair determined that parts of that bill were off limit for our deliberation. And yet, if the bill wasn't germane to that committee, it shouldn't have been in that committee. And so it seems to me that this is an important issue in terms of being able to have a bill up before a committee, because it, at least part of it is strictly germane to the committee. Seems to me that that means that all sections of the bill ought to be fair game for deliberation and amendments. And I'm just trying to think through what kind of limitations would happen here if we get into the practice of saying parts of the bill are not germane because the chair just decides that that part of the bill has nothing to do with this committee. It's sort of a confusing situation, I think, that sets up. We were certainly confused last year, because we thought it was fair game for us to offer amendments at that time to a bill that clearly had sections that we thought were germane to our amendments.
Representative Dorman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a comment, and just, you know, how maybe a question about how you're going to interpret things. in the past, I've been critical of some of the chairs as they've interpreted germaneness. It seems like there's not a standard for it, and I wish there was. I mean, I don't know what, to Representative Mariani's point, if they, when the education bill comes before the tax committee, you know, I think amendments that don't deal somehow with taxes should be ruled out of order, and the tax committee ought not be dealing with them on issues of education policy. And I guess as a new member to Ways and Means, I don't know how you've dealt with these in the past, but if the education bill, education finance bill, comes before us, I would hope that we would limit our discussions and our amendments to the financial parts of that bill and not try to rewrite the education policy portions of it here or in another committee other than education policy. And so I don't know how you've been in the past. I have seen a couple of things that appeared after they've left the committee and they got to the floor, and I don't know how other members feel, but I take a dim view of that in any committee. I'll go back to the biodiesel debate. You know, it got sent to taxes to try to kill it, and the debate that we had in taxes at that time really, in my opinion, weren't germane to the tax portion of the bill, but that's what happened. So my point, after all this rambling, and I should point out that this is not an official position of the subcaucus of the Camel Hair Jacket, members of the Ways and Means Committee, but how are you going to treat these? I mean, you know, it's interesting to see how it's written, but how are you going to treat them, and you know, what are your view on these issues?
Well, Representative Gorman, I guess I would say, first of all, and Representative Solbergers or others who have been on the committee in the last 2 years, correct me if I'm wrong, but I do not believe in the last 2 years I have ruled any amendment non-germane to a bill. Perhaps I'm recalling them correctly. But having said that, I certainly think if the education bill is before us and someone brings up a health and human services issue, that probably it's not germane to that bill and they ought to wait till the health and human services bill or whatever other related bill comes up.
Well, Mr. Chair, what
Representative
about,
Dorman?
What about the education policy portion of that bill? I mean, should that be fair game? Should we be the education committee? Because at a certain point, if you get on that road far enough, why have other committees? Why not just, you know, we've got a big committee now the way it is. Why not just have one Ways and Means Committee? We can all save a lot of time and not go to these any other committee hearings because we're going to do it all here in Ways and Means. And so why would education policy, why would an amendment dealing with education policy be germane to the committee on Ways and Means?
Mr. Chair. Representative Solberg.
Chairman, your last statement sounded like last year's policy committee in Ways and Means as we changed everything when it came. But I do think that in all due respect, that the committee has to have some flexibility and to be able to consider things. And Representative Osmond, to answer your question, how do you control things? Well, you shouldn't control things in committee. All you have to do is vote. The chair shouldn't say that this is not going to be voted on. And I admire the chair for at least not doing that in the past, but this rule gives them the authority to do that. And what you should be able to say is, you know, I don't like this particular amendment, let's vote it down or vote it up or whatever. And there's nothing wrong with having some votes once in a while.
Let's see. I've got Representative Rukavina, Sikora, and Abler. Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to stick up for you for members, new members on the committee, that you have been very fair, and I just can't recall one time where you ruled anything out of order. But Representative Garman, I just want to reiterate what Representative Solberg said. You know, a lot of us don't sit on other committees, and once in a while something comes through in a bill, and it's our last opportunity before it reaches the floor to correct what we see as an injustice or an inequity or something, and we've done that here many times on policy. Matter of fact, I've gotten support from a lot of you on the other side on a few of my amendments, which I appreciate. So I trust you, but I understand Representative Greiling's concern that to put it in the rules is something new. I trust your judgment. You've been more than fair. You could be a little fairer at times, but you know, you've been more than fair, and I trust you on it. But it is, you know, it is a concern to see it right in the rules.
Well, again, it has been in there the last 2 years. Members, you know, on the policy issue, Representative Dorman, I will tell you that, firstly, I guess policy affects money in a lot of circumstances, and so I guess even though it may seem just like policy, oftentimes it relates to future appropriations, which even if it's not a specific appropriation for this biennium or this budget period we're considering, we are given the authority under the rules to consider future obligations of the state as well. Secondly, I would say that I have often had authors of bills show up here at the Ways and Means Committee with solely policy amendments that they want to have put on the bill to, I guess, get the shape and get the bill in better shape or change something about the bill that they thought ought to be changed. And I don't think it's our place to say, no, we're not going to let you put this policy amendment on the bill. And finally, this is the last stop before the bill goes to the floor. And I think that we're better off trying to get a bill in shape if we have to, that needs to get in shape here than on the floor. Having said that, I really would prefer that we try to focus as much as we can on the finance issues, keeping in mind that many times they do relate to the policy. Representative Sikora.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to comment on the idea of doing policy in this committee. I think the only time it makes sense to do policy is when it's driving a certain cost, because what we're here to deal with really is the means of paying for what we're going to do. And to have, you know, everybody here getting bogged down in a whole bunch of policy, do you know how many hours we need to spend in Ways and Means in this year if we're going to do that?
We'll try to stay away from it, Representative Sikora.
Thanks.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Abler, Dorman, and Solberg, unless it's to that point, Representative
Chairman,
Solberg.
I just want to bring some history from last year. And there were an awful lot of bills that were not offered by the Democrats on that, but were offered by the Republicans and they were strictly policy bills to fix up. And as the chair said, sometimes I was never critical of them. I may be critical of the policy, but not critical of us determining that we should be able to have a vote on in this committee. I don't care what we consider. I do object when a chair says we're not going to consider something, because then you got one person doing the voting. I don't have any problem with votes on a committee. I think that's what we should be doing.
Representative Abler.
I have a suggestion, Mr. Chair. I think that I think the issue here is about process and who's running the place and who's trying to do justice to the topic. And I think that as a matter of common affairs, that the chair should rule on the general nature of some things on the pollution bill or on the education bill. But I think that there should be some chance for the majority of the committee to think that maybe he was didn't quite get it right that time. And so if you, as a suggestion, which you can take under advisement, I would suggest you would insert language at the end of the sentence on the last sentence of paragraph 4 with a comma subject to a vote of the committee. I think that hardly ever happened, as will the first case hardly ever happened, but I think it shows the openness you intend to conduct, and that way nobody will feel like they couldn't bring it to a vote if they wanted. And I think that would just... So that's my thought.
Okay. I've got one other person, Representative Dorman, and then I think, unless someone's really got something new to say, we should move on. Representative Dorman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I think after listening to the discussion, it highlights what I think is the problem with having any germaneness rule at all, because I don't know how you draw the standard, and I sure haven't heard that there's how that standard, how you looked at the standard or how it would be looked at in the past, which means, and I'm all right with, let's just be honest about it, it's going to be a free-for-all if you want, and you're going to bring your amendments here, and that's all right with me as long as we're clear about it, but then let's not have any germaneness rule at all, because I'd rather have no rule than one that's not administered in a thoughtful and uniform manner. And I think if I listen to the concerns, I think that's what the concerns of other members are, is, okay, you've got this germaneness rule. How are you going to make sure that's administered in a fair and standard way? And I'm not sure that that's possible.
Well, again, members, I do think there is an example when you talk about a specific bill. If we've got the education bill here and someone brings forward an amendment that strictly has to do with human services and it's got nothing to do with education, I think that the chair could appropriately rule that as being non-germane, and whoever's got that amendment ought to save it for the human services bill. We don't want to get into a situation where we've got bills that come here and win one subject and they leave here with all sorts of other extraneous subjects attached to them that don't have anything to do with that particular bill. That's just not good legislation, and there will be plenty of times and plenty of opportunities for amendments here on the committee with all the omnibus bills coming here, I can assure you of that, but I do think that there is a place for germaneness. I guess with that, let me say this. I guess, you know, the rules give the chair the right to set this. We did have this in place the last 2 years. I guess for now I'd like to say that these are the rules, but I will take Representative Abler's suggestion and Representative Breiling's under consideration and send you something as an email or an announcement in the near future on any potential revision to this, because particularly in regard to some sort of vote, that may be something that's reasonable. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that very much. And would it, could I ask one question here? If what you send out is something that we all, or most of us, think is a good idea, that would be the end of it. But if it is not, could I request some more committee time? Because then I would entertain making an amendment. But I would prefer to wait and see, perhaps, if your resolution of it isn't fine with me.
Okay. Well, Representative Greiling, I guess I'm certainly willing, as long as the rest of the committee is willing, to entertain discussion about just about anything. But I also do need to point out that the rules do give the chair the right to set the rules without a vote. But why don't you see what I send out, and we'll see if we can all come to a happy conclusion. All right. Thank you, members. With that, kumbaya. Yes, Representative Rukavina.
I have to obey rule number 8 because I might have a tough time with that.
Oh, boy, I better look at rule number 8. Oh, the one that starts with the word quiet?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I guess maybe I should have had a rule number 11 dealing with enforcement mechanisms for that rule. All right, Mr. Marks, please go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members, I believe there is a folder in your bigger folder that says budget information on it, and this is a follow-up to the discussion we had a couple weeks ago. First of all, I should also mention in that folder, I believe, are two items, a letter to the committee that responds to several questions that were asked the last time, and then also a list of the Finance Committee accounts that was asked about last time, so you can look at those. Then there are three additional handouts, one that says budget background on the top and then has a list of items on it and is several pages stapled together. And then one that's labeled A and one that's labeled D, and I will be using those in the presentation. First of all, on page one in there, this is the same chart I used to start off last time, just showing spending in all funds for the projected for the fiscal 2006-2007 biennium. And we talked about last time the general fund being about 60% of the total, which means other funds are about 40%. And this breaks out on this chart those other funds or some general categories of those other funds as well. Federal funds at just under 24% being the biggest category in that area. And we've got more information. We'll look at that. Transportation and transit are about six different funds, including trunk highway, highway user, county state aid, municipal state aid, and some transit ones that are grouped there, and those are just under 9%. Over on the other side, debt service, just under 2%, the money needed to pay off general obligation bonds. Special revenue, which we'll talk a little more about it, at 2%. And then others is grouping probably 15 to 20 other funds into one category, which make up about 4%. And I'll have more information on those as we go through this. One other way to look at this on page 2 is to take the all funds budget and look at it by committee. This is looking at essentially committee structure here. One note on this. In this particular graph, the Department of Human Service accounts that had been moved to the Jobs and Economic Opportunity Committee are still shown in the Health and Human Services area. I haven't had a chance to separate those out, so that's a little bit different than the committee structure, but basically that's the way this is organized. Just a couple notes on here, and I may have mentioned this the last time too, where there are some substantial differences between general fund only and this all funds one. Probably the most drastic difference is in the transportation area. On this chart, you can see transportation down here making up about 10% of the all funds budget. It was less than 1% when we looked at general fund. And there's an area where most of the expenditures in the transportation area are not out of the general fund. They're through the various highway funds and money that's not that doesn't go through the general fund. The other charts here, or the other pies here, also show the various other committee areas. Then on page 3 in that handout, just showing some history of the expenditures in the all funds compared to general fund. This shows for about a 15-year period the level of expenditures on an annual basis, all funds, and then breaking out general fund and funds other than the general fund. And you can see the trends here, essentially the all funds numbers growing throughout the years, but the general fund has leveled off in the last several years here. This goes through fiscal year 2005. This is partially a reflection of budget issues and relatively level spending in the general fund, while spending in some of the other funds has not leveled or is continuing to grow. There will be more information later in the handout showing numbers and more details on that. Again, reflecting that the general fund has, over time, has been about 60% of the total. Okay, on pages...
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rucavina.
Sure, I'm sorry. Mark, did you say you would get into this a little deeper later?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rucavina, I'll have some numbers starting with the next handout.
Okay, Mr. Marks.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members, pages 4 and 5 present the same kind of information for first the general fund and then for all funds. And these do show specific numbers for these years. And this is the first three columns on these pages are the year, and then looking at Minnesota population, Minnesota personal income. And then the fourth column over is showing the spending in first on page 4 in general fund and on page 5 in all funds. And those are the numbers that went into this bar graph here. And then showing dollar change and percentage change. And then also showing the same numbers on a biannual basis, dollar change and percentage change. And then the final columns on these two pages are showing the spending as a percent of personal income and the spending on a per capita basis. And there are any number of comparisons or any amount of information you may want to look at or present from these kinds of charts. I think the one interesting thing that I always see on this kind of information is the differences in the percentage changes on an annual versus biannual basis, and you really need to look at what you're comparing and what kinds of numbers you're comparing to think about the kinds of changes here.
Well, Mr. Marks, how does the refilling of the reserves and the expenditure of, say, the tobacco endowment, if you consider those sorts of reserve or sort of reserve type items, how does that affect this trend in spending?
Mr. Chair, the refilling of reserves would not be showing up in here because that's not considered spending per se. If the money's taken out of the reserve and spent as it was in 2002 or 2003, then it will show up it becomes counted as a spending item at that point. Now, one thing to note here, while it doesn't show up on a spending comparison, it will show up on a revenue comparison. So, for example, price of government information, refilling the reserves is raising revenue, but it's not spending. So it's those amounts going into reserves will make a difference on those kinds of charts.
So when we look at these numbers, we're seeing spending from reserves, but we're not seeing refilling of reserves.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. And the other thing you mentioned, taking money from the tobacco endowment, it would have been revenue to the general fund in the year it was transferred, which I believe was fiscal year 2004. And then it would be spending out of the general fund probably in both fiscal 2004 and 2005. So it allowed for additional spending. So that $1 billion is in the spending in the current biennium.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members, then on page 6, this has a fairly detailed summary of spending in all funds by year for 6 years' worth of data. A lot of detail on here. There are some funds that have no information for some years. That may be a case of where the fund was just started up, or it may be a case if the zeros are in the latter years of where the fund has been discontinued or is no longer relevant. that there are totals at the bottom of the page. I think probably the better information here is just to look at the various funds and get some sense of what kind of activity is going on in those funds and what level the expenditures are at. There are, I think I'll let that one go because I've got the next handout gets into a little more information on each particular fund.
Representative Seifert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Marks, on page 6, the fifth line down in state government special revenue, that number has gone up significantly in the last few years, up to 91. Is that the funds that we have, like in the Department of Administration, with some of the telecommunications and revenue generators they have, or what entails that roughly?
Mr. Marks. Mr. Chair, Representative Seifert, state government special revenue, the biggest group of group of accounts within that are in the health-related boards, medical practitioner, nursing, and so on. Their licensure fees move through this one. There is some, I believe there is some money, there are some accounts that are in the state government finance committee in here, and I am not sure just which ones they involve, and I'll have to get back to you on that. I don't know if all the increased activity is coming from those health-related boards or not, but I'll have to check further on that one.
Representative Riccovino.
Mr. Chair, on that same page, a couple more down, Mr. Marks, on the Healthcare Access Fund. I'm assuming those collection numbers actually you have there before any transfers are made in law?
Yeah, I think it's different.
Mr. Chair, Representative Riccovino, these are expenditures and they should include transfers. I need to double check here.
Mm-hmm. Even if, Mr. Chair, even if it was transferred to something unrelated to the, like Minnesota Care and that, is it still counted as an expenditure?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rubina, these are representing expenditures only at this on this page, and the transfers are separate. Here, these are only expenditures. The next summary has includes expenditures and transfers. Just mention on the Healthcare Access Fund, the transfer, if you want the transfer numbers in addition, I have them from fiscal 2003 on. In fiscal 2003, transfers out totaled $6.9 million. In 2004, transfers out were $21 million. In fiscal 2005, the transfers out $239 million.
Representative Solberg.
Where are they listed?
In fiscal 2003, transfers out $6.9 million. 2004, $21 million. 2005, $238.8
million.
Well,
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm just curious then, Mr. Marks, so the transfer aren't even included in there yet. We see some phenomenal growth there. Is that just because of the money, the increases in the healthcare system itself, or is there something else going on in there?
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair and Representative Riccovino, I think it's a variety of a variety of things going on. There's been the revenue numbers are generally increasing in the Healthcare Access Fund. There have been a considerable number of expenditures moved in and out of that fund, and some of those expenditure changes are occurring because of other policy changes that as to whether persons would qualify for Minnesota Care or other programs. So I think there are a variety of things going on in there, and I'm not comfortable enough getting into the details to explain just what all is going on in there.
Now, Representative Rucker, I am going to have a hearing where we get into just are rapidly increasing health care costs sometime in the next month. And so I really think that is an important topic with all the publicity it's been given. I know Representative Aguinas had suggested that as a hearing topic to me a while ago, and that is on my list of hearings we're going to have sometime in the next coming week. So we may want to get more into that then. Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, we also see some huge jumps in special revenue funds going down just a little bit farther, is that fee increases,
Mr. Marks?
Or can we break that down a little bit into what that means?
Can you cite a couple specific funds, Representative?
Well, Mr. Chairman, just want to know. I got a copy of a guy who got arrested for a obstructed windshield. In other words, had something hanging on his windshield, or that was fogged up or something. His fine was $0 in the fine. But he had to pay $5 to the library fund and $60 a surcharge fee for being zero fine. So he had a zero fine and he had to pay $65. Another guy had a fine of $20 for something and he had to pay $85. So, you know, where are we, all those additional fees and costs, where are they? Are they going directly to the general fund or are they coming into the special revenue funds? When you see the special revenue funds increasing,
that's
not state government special revenue, but down farther.
Mr. Marks, where is the surcharge reflected in here? Does that go directly into the general fund, or do you know where it goes?
Mr. Chair, the surcharge on fines that Representative Sober is going or is referring to is probably going into the general fund. Many of those do go directly in the general fund. There are some in special revenue as well, I believe, and I'd have to go back and check as to which ones are going in which fund. Just in your question as far as the special revenue fund in particular, I'm just glancing through the various items here, and there are no particular increases that seem to stand out, but there are just generally increases in various areas. So it probably does represent, in some cases, fee increases, and in some cases, probably increased usage or increased number of people that are using or paying particular fees of whichever source they are.
Mr. Chairman, then the other question that needs to be asked is, do you have any history in the last few years of money that has been transferred out of the special revenue fund into the general fund, as you did with the Health Care Act? If you don't, I think it'd be an important issue.
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, for fiscal years 2003 through 2005 or 2006 and 2007, there are some numbers here. The biggest area that there are transfers out is to the general fund. It was about $84 million in 2003, $43 million in 2004, and is estimated to be $23 million in 2005. And I think you're right, that's reflecting a number of transfers from balances and accounts in the special revenue fund to the general fund that were largely part of the budget balancing measures taken in 2003.
Mr. Chairman, then I think the other interesting thing would be is if we could have some kind of a breakdown of the general fund. We usually think as sales tax and income tax as our main sources. But it would be interesting to see how many fees go directly to the general fund. I think the health care access fee or the nursing home fee probably goes directly to the general fund. I don't know that for sure, and I would like to know that. If the fines go directly, or the surcharge goes directly to the general fund, I'd like to know how much that's raising.
Mr. Marks, maybe you can check on that.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I can. And just as a general reference, there is a, in the general fund on an annual basis, the category called departmental earnings, which is largely fees, is in the neighborhood of, it's $243 million in 2004, $229 million in 2005. So that's just gives some perspective to it.
Thank you.
Representative Earhart.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm looking at page 4, fiscal year 2004. The 13.5 shown under spending is primarily from sales and income taxes and the statewide property tax. Am I looking at that right?
Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair, and Representative Earhart, page 4 is for the general fund, so the revenue sources for that spending, yes, would be primarily income tax, sales tax, statewide property tax, and the number of fees, as Representative Silberg alluded to. And just a couple notes on there, especially during the current biennium, the items like the $1 billion transfer from the tobacco endowment into the general fund would also be show up as spending in the general fund in 2004 and 2005.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The same on the all funds 2004, the 22.5 for spending. Now, where is the listing of what those things come from? Or are we yet to have that revealed?
Mr. Mark.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, it would include the general fund items plus the items in the other funds. I don't have a list here of specifically of revenues. Obviously, federal grants would be the single biggest item within that, making up about half of the other funds. It would include items such as hunting and fishing licenses in the Game and Fish Fund, gas tax, any of those non-general fund items, and I can get more specific information for later if you want that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, when you back this up to a page where it shows 36, let's see, what page? Page 2, which shows Health Human Services as 36% of all the of all funds for Health and Human Services. That means that Health and Human Services is more than the $8 billion we quote as being the expenditures, because we are only talking general fund money?
Mr. Marks.
Chair, Representative Earhart, that's correct. The general fund spending, I believe, is about $8 billion. Health and Human Services receives a lot of federal money, and that's what drives the all funds number up very high for the Health and Human Services area, is the federal money moving through. Also, healthcare access fund spending would be another item in there. It's not nearly as high as the federal spending, but the federal spending is probably the single biggest item that makes that difference.
Thank you.
Representative Bradley.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe because it comes up all the time, a little bit of an explanation, because I keep hearing about the $2,000 that was charged to private pay patients in nursing homes. And Representative Silberg, you probably know this, we don't tend to track, because we pay today the medical assistance rates are paid out of the general fund for those people in nursing homes that are on medical assistance. So when we did that transaction, we brought in about $90 million. That $90 million went into the general fund, but I can tell you that in large measure, matter of fact, more than it, because all of that was used to prevent a reduction in nursing home rates. Had we gone with the recommendation of 4% nursing home rates, that would have been about a $300 million funding hole for nursing homes. So $90 million of that. Now, we typically don't follow. When we make those individual decisions about revenues going into the general fund, if you wanted to track the money, you'd see that it tracks right back. You could easily say it tracks right back to help protect that industry. But we don't set up special accounts. You know, you could call that a special revenue, but we don't do that. But in fact, that decision, which was supported as well by the Senate, was a decision that helped protect the nursing homes.
Yeah, members, I don't want to have a big, long discussion about this, because I know we'll have a big, long discussion about it later. But Representative Rukavina.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think two Democrats supported that in the Senate and passed the bill. And the rest were all Republicans, Representative Bradley. But the point being, then my nursing homes must not be giving me the straight skivvy on what's happened, because they have told me that their funds have been cut since 2003 bill, including even though... you know, the 27% that it might be in the Virginia Convalescent Center Nursing Home, or the 31% in the Benedictine Sisters Nursing Home in Everett are paying that $2,000 plus surcharge, that their actual income, because they had to pay some kind of a increased fee and state benefits, and that they netted out a negative. And so I know theoretically, you know, you said that it was going to be a wash, but that's not the case, because I think my City of Virginia has a city-owned nursing home and hospital, and between the two of them, if the nursing home is the majority of the cut, I think it was like $149,000 less. So I'd be curious to see how they it was neutral.
Mr. Chair, I know you don't want to continue. I'd be happy to sit down with you, but that transaction was a revenue-neutral transaction to a nursing home by virtue of them increasing their rates, and we made sure that we took our part from the medical assistance rates. We increased the rates sufficiently to cover the medical assistance $2,000 per bed, and then they increased the rates as well for the private pay. We have to do that without trying to get into a long explanation. We could not do the revenue raiser that we did. We could not raise the $90 million unless we did it across the board on all beds. But it should have come out. Now, I'd be happy to look at your individual nursing home situation. It should have come out neutral for to the nursing home, not necessarily to the private pay patient. I understand.
Okay, you know, I'm wondering if I don't know if you saw the Pioneer Press article this morning where I talked about gently moving along the committee. I wonder if this is one of these times where I need to try to gently move us along. But I want to be,
Mr. Chair,
Representative Rukavina.
I want to hear what Representative Earhart has.
Representative Earhart?
Why?
All right, let's gently move along. Mr. Marks. You have something to say. Oh, okay.
I wanted to ask Representative Bradley, Mr. Chairman, is there an easier way to show this on our records and books so that the public would understand it? Because the way it goes now, it does not come across well. And then you send out a long letter explaining this that I can't understand, so I don't know how I can explain it to somebody.
I would say the answer is probably no. This is complex transactions that are kind of inside baseball, and they're complicated. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I have an answer.
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Marks has this little memo in our packet that he hasn't gotten to yet. On the back side, that's number 3. Representative Rukavina asked what the medical assistance surcharge is. And in 5 paragraphs, it explains the history of it, where the money goes. In fact, it started in 1991, interestingly enough. I didn't know that. And increased in the 90s and in 2002. So apparently the 2003 session wasn't the first time that there's been this surcharge. But this explains it really good. It's the front side is from Mr. Marks, dated January 13th.
Okay, well then let's move along to Mr. Marks.
Sure.
Representative Rukavina, do you really have to say something else?
Mr. Chair, I do, because I still don't really understand the Mr. Marks.
Okay, well then it's all the more reason to move to Mr. Marks so we can get point.
Okay, but Mr. Chair, but I did have a suggestion for Representative Earhart to tell his constituents. Just tell him what I've been telling them, that the Republicans nicked
him. All right, go ahead, Mr. Marks. Let's move on here. Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, members, if we move on to the handout here that's labeled A in the upper right-hand corner, this is a list of...
Mr. Marks, before you move on to that, I want to go back to page 6 for a question.
Okay.
The Minnesota Future Resources Fund, that shows $1.4 million in 05 still. I thought that was eliminated.
Mr. Chair, the fund was not eliminated. The revenue source for the fund was eliminated, and there's still a balance in that fund.
Mr. Chairman, you should tell them what the revenue source was.
The cigarette tax.
Yeah. It was, 3 cents?
2 cents.
2 cents on a cigarette tax. That was transferred, Mr. Chair, also to the general fund.
Yep.
It went from $5 million down to one.
But you're saying there's a $1.4 million balance there.
Mr. Chair, there is no revenue source anymore. It's a balance that's being carried forward at this point, and I am not sure of the history on that. I believe there, I at one time thought it was eliminated too, but I believe there were some projects that had been funded that were not, or projects that were authorized that the spending had not occurred on them, and it was being carried forward to cover that into this. Into a future biennium, but I believe I believe at this point the balance is probably sitting there. I'm not quite sure.
So I see Representative Osmond nodding his head, so I think you're right about that. Mr. Marks, the special revenue funds, I know we passed a bill that I think had pretty much unanimous support in this committee last year dealing with special revenue funds. Are we supposed to be getting a report back of some kind from the Commissioner of Finance on special revenue funds that are being canceled out and recommendations on what to do with some of the rest of them?
Mr. Chair, excuse me, that's correct. There is a requirement passed last session that directs the Commissioner of Finance to eliminate accounts that meet certain criteria, and basically they're inactive accounts. There is also a requirement in that law that that any balance in those accounts eliminated is automatically transferred to the general fund. And then there's also a requirement in that that law passed last year, and this is 16A.53, if anybody wanted to look it up, that each agency that manages an account within a fund must report at least annually to the appropriate finance committees of the legislature on the number, purpose, and recent financial activity in those accounts, and then directs the commissioner to establish criteria and timing for the reports. That report for this current fiscal year, fiscal 2005, has not been made yet. Talking with people in the Department of Finance recently, their goal was to try to get something done in March so that it would be here soon, hopefully.
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Marks, I remember the discussion last year in passing that for the funds that are being eliminated, is that considered in the last forecast or will it be in the next forecast?
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, Representative Seifert, I am not aware that any have yet been eliminated. If the commissioner has actually done it, then it should be built into the forecast. If it's part of a governor's recommendation, for example, to do it, then it would be a change that would come as part of a governor's recommendation.
Okay. Mr. Marsh, also on that page 6, I guess my last question, the Northeast Minnesota Economic Protection Fund, which is near the bottom of the list of the special funds, shows a balance of $1 million. Now, is that the 21st Century Mineral Fund, or is that the so-called Doug Johnson Fund?
Mr. Chair, Representative, or Mr. Chair, this is the Doug Johnson Fund. This is showing the expenditures in that fund. If you want a little more history on that or a little more information, if you look at the handout label A and go to...
Chairman, that's the IPPRB's match for the 21st Century Mineral Fund.
The last page, and it's the second one from the top, and
maybe I should let you get on to number 8, and I guess I wasn't aware that there was any expenditures out of the Doug Johnson Fund, but I guess that's... I guess we'll learn some more about that. Representative Riccovina.
Mr. Marks, where does it show the permanent school fund? So these aren't all the funds in state government that you have on page 6?
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, Representative Riccovina, page 6 is a listing of all the operating funds. It's not all funds, and I'll make a distinction there. Things like pension funds and so on are not on here because they're not considered operating funds. This is showing expenditures out of funds as opposed to perhaps all the activity in the funds. The permanent school fund is the lower part of the page. It's after the first subtotal, and it's endowment and permanent school fund. Oh, and it's okay. Showing roughly $20 million a year, and it's actually dropping down a little lower in some of the more recent years, probably largely reflecting lower investment earnings. Permanent school fund is a trust fund where the principal is not spent, but the investment income is spent.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I know.
Representative Riccovina.
So why is it treated differently than the environmental trust fund then? Because that's just the corpus too.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Riccovina, part of this is just happens to be the format that I had this set up in, and I haven't changed it in a number of years, and it should be reorganized. There's another endowment fund just above that that should also be grouped in the same way. And the Department of Finance has reorganized its consolidated fund statement several years ago, and I haven't done that on this sheet yet. So.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. All right, Mr. Marks. Well, why don't we go on to the A handout?
Mr. Chairman, members, the handout labeled A is again looking at the same funds that were on page 6, but providing a bit more information about each one. It provides some summary information as far as what the fund is for. Also, in the upper right-hand side of each fund, it's telling whether the appropriations out of this fund are direct, that is, appropriations being made by the legislature every 2 years, or statutory appropriations that are authorized in statute and will continue unless the legislature does something to stop or change them. This is providing fiscal information for 3 years, and it's providing three sets of information: receipts and transfers in, expenditures and transfers out, and then what the balance forward is. So it's a bit more complete information. It's also telling you the statutory authority and what agency manages these. In the interest of time, Mr. Chair, I'm wondering if you want to go through this or if you prefer to leave this up to people to look at.
Well, I just told Mr. Sasson he could go, Mr. Marks. So, so I guess we'll see how many questions everyone has. But this is something that I think is important. There's a lot of money that flows through these other funds. People commonly think about the general fund, not realizing there's almost as much money, 40% of the budget, that flows through the non-general funds as the general fund. So I think that, you know, if we can try to quickly go through these one by one, it may generate some questions that some people have. Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, it would also be interesting to know, you know, we got the percentage, about 60% of the budget is general fund, and then we think, well, the rest of it is 40%. But it would be interesting to know how much of that, then, that total expenditure we have is federal fund. What percentage is federal funds, and what percentage then is other revenue, fees, et cetera, expenditures in other categories. And I know federal funds is most of it, but there's a substantial amount of in and out because of fees and expenditures.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Solberg, if you look back to that first handout, there's a chart where it says federal is 23.8%. Is that, Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. That would answer the first part of Representative Solberg's question. This is federal funds as a percentage of all funds, so that would, I think, answer your first question. The issue of fees and so on is one that I need to do a little more work on, but we could put that together.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that's interesting for a reason. Mm-hmm. I remember when I sat in your chair as Chair of Ways and Means and attended a meeting several years ago, but the Pollution Control Agency had a presentation, and they were saying how good they were running the agency. They extended their expenditures from $55 million to, I think, $111 million, with zero amount of general fund money increase. But it was huge fee increases that were being paid mostly by some businesses that may or not be regulated, and there was not much accounting of it. Just huge fee increases. So I think that's an important aspect.
Mr. Marks.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members, then in the handout label A, this is essentially a more detailed list of what we were just talking about on page 6. The first one on here, Minnesota Technology Incorporated Fund, and I'll point out there's an error in here. The balance forward says zero in 2005 and 2006. It should say $3,000. That balance is simply carrying forward. This fund is essentially becoming inactive because Minnesota Technology is not receiving state appropriations anymore. This was actually a place where the state general fund appropriation for Minnesota Technology was deposited, as well as money that Minnesota Technology may have earned from various services they provided or the services they charged for. So, but this one is essentially will no longer show up on the list because there's no activity there. Excuse me. Minnesota Environmental and Natural Resources Trust Fund is the fund that receives the constitutional dedication of lottery proceeds, the 40% of lottery revenues. There is a portion of this is essentially a trust fund that shows up in the balance forward, and that's why the balance forward numbers are so high. And then the level of expenditures is the amount that can be spent each year. The receipts are actually reflecting the total receipts to the fund, and then in any given year, and then the principal of that cannot be spent. and just mention that this the expenditures out of this fund are direct appropriations. They will be considered in Representative Osmond's committee, and they are the expenditures that the Legislative Commission on Minnesota Resources reviews. We talked earlier a little bit about the Minnesota Future Resources Fund, and this is one, again, where the revenue source is no longer there. The fund had received a portion of the cigarette tax, and the balance forward there was an issue or an item that we discussed. The Petroleum Tank Release Fund is an account. Revenue is from a fee on petroleum tanks, and the revenue is for petroleum tank cleanup. This is managed by the Pollution Control Agency and is a statutory appropriation. The State Government Special Revenue Fund, this is the one Representative Seifert asked about a little earlier, and I need to do a little checking on it, but it's primarily health and state government-related accounts, mostly direct appropriations, although some of them are statutory, and again, you can see the dollar amounts there. The Natural Resources Fund on the top of the second page, this includes several distinct accounts, accounts for snowmobile, ATV, water recreation, non-game wildlife, land acquisition, off-highway vehicles, and off-road vehicles, and each of these is in most cases dealing with license fees and then expenditures for purposes related to those fees. They are mostly direct appropriations. Again, they would be reviewed in Representative Osmond's committee.
Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe Mr. Marks or maybe Representative Osmond can tell us what's happening in 05 when they're spending about $12 million more than they take in. Is that a special occurrence of some kind? Mr. Marks, you know? They're pretty protective of this money.
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, I and Representative Rukavina, I don't know specifically what's going on here. What's likely occurring is that a number of expenditures were probably pushed into the second year of the biennium from the first year or something to that effect, but we can check on it more. Mr. Chair, members, then the Health Care Access Fund, which we've also discussed a bit. These are direct appropriations. The revenue is from the provider tax and a premium tax, and then expenditures for various health Minnesota care related, as well as the notes here, transfers to the general fund that are shown here.
Mr. Marks, on that, I know that we received a fairly large sum of money from the federal government that went into this fund, if I recall, sometime in the last year or two. Do you remember what that amount was? It was part of that federal $20 billion they sent out to have the states help the states with their budget deficit problems.
Mr. Chair, and I need to check. I don't know if that was an issue in the way the governor handled the budget deficit at the end of last session. That there was going to be, I believe, $114 million transferred into the Health Care Access Fund that represented costs that were occurring out of the Health Care Access Fund relative to the federal money. I believe most of that money never got transferred there as a way to handle or to resolve the general fund budget issue at the end of last session. But we'll need to check on that and keep just where we ended up on it.
Right here, it says it. And up at the top.
Okay. Then, Mr. Chair, the next one, the Special Revenue Fund. This is probably the one that could be called the catch-all fund, or the fund that if it doesn't fit somewhere else, it fits here. And the note here, there are over 1,000 different individual accounts within this fund. Most of them are maybe small fee programs or even things like when an agency holds a some sort of staff development, or when an agency prepares a booklet and sells it, the revenue goes back into doing more of those booklets. It serves the purposes of revolving accounts in a number of cases. As I mentioned, it holds a lot of fee accounts. It has some major items. I mentioned here the 21st Century Minerals account is an account within the Special Revenue Fund. There it is really the catch-all sort of fund where if no designations made in law, the accounts frequently end up here. And so there's a lot of activity. It crosses most committee jurisdictions, and it's easy to lose track of some small items within that fund. And this is probably the one that the report that is required in the new law where it will be most valuable, in the sense that this is one that doesn't always get scrutinized as carefully as it perhaps should be.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Silbert.
All right, all the commodity funds included in that, the checkoff for wheat and corn and soybeans and all those things.
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, Representative Silbert, the agriculture-related ones are in the next item listed on there, the agricultural fund. To the extent that those are state, if they're state checkoff programs as opposed to federal ones, they would be in the agricultural fund in most cases. And the agricultural fund was actually split off from the special revenue fund probably 4 years ago now, as a way to try and track the agriculture accounts separately and to pull them out of the special revenue fund.
So, Mr. Chairman, are most of those checkoff dollars, are they federal, are they state, do they flow through the state? I'm not picking anybody, but Minnesota corn producers or Minnesota wheat producers, does Minnesota...
Chair Representative, I'm not sure. Okay. I'll have to check.
Okay. We're getting all kinds of homework for you, Mr. Marks.
How you get paid?
Yeah. All right. No, that's fine.
In the next folder.
All right. Go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Chair, the agricultural fund, I'll just mention it here. It is agriculture-related accounts, started several years ago, and most of the Department of Agriculture's accounts are in that fund. Some are still in the Special Revenue Fund and a few other places, but this one is essentially all Department of Agriculture accounts. The airports, State Airports Fund is a revenue source. Our taxes on aircraft fuels and various other kind of airport-related items. One note on here: in fiscal 2003, $15 million was transferred to the general fund from the state airports fund, so that you can see the higher expenditure level in fiscal 2003, or higher expenditure and transfer level, was due to that transfer. Obviously, this one showing a negative balance in 2006, that's something that the Transportation Finance Committee will have to look at, just to make sure that that negative balance doesn't occur there. And presumably governor's recommendations will deal with that as well.
And Mr. Marks, what happens in a case of a negative balance like that? I mean, I guess if there was a negative balance in the general fund, I mean, it would come out of the budget reserve or the cash flow account, but this is not a general fund item. I mean, is that an accounting situation, or is someone, have we actually advanced $281,000 so the checks don't bounce? What happens there?
Mr. Chair, in this case, it's at the end of fiscal 2006, so it's an issue that will have to be addressed. These are direct appropriations out of this account, so the Transportation Finance Committee or Transportation Finance Bill needs to make those appropriations. Mr. Chair, as far as the general question, though, I believe there may be limited authority for the Commissioner of Finance, and somebody here from Finance can nod if I'm wrong, but I believe there may be authority to do some temporary transfers between funds to cover these, but I'm not sure if we do. I'm not sure about the ability to run a negative or have a deficit at the end of the year here.
Well,
check on that too.
Representative Solberg.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I thought there was a provision in the state law that said that the $15 million that was taken from the state airport funds, the fees paid by pilots for improving airports around the state, was supposed to be paid back to them.
Representative Solberg, it will be July 1st, 2007.
Oh, way out there. Okay.
Well, getting closer and closer.
Yeah, well, you got a negative balance in 2006, getting transferred $18 million. You could be doing some spending of money on air fixing up airports around the state, not have a negative balance, too.
Representative Beard.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm very aware of this. In fact, one of my goals is to get reelected until I see that $15 million go back in.
You're going to be that long?
It's been a long time.
Don't give Representative Solberg any ideas, Representative Beard.
The deficit in 2006, I had I chair the aviation subcommittee again that Representative Earhart and Speaker put back together. We're aware of that, and there's some things in programming that because of some delays and some projects that will make that go away, but it does show up on paper, and we're aware of it.
So Representative Beard, if you know the answer to this question, so are you saying this is a case where we have obligations in 2006 that we're committed to, but we just haven't sent the checks out yet, and so when we see a negative $281,000, that is sort of what the number would be if we sent all the money out that we're obligated to send out?
Correct, Mr. Chair. There's one in particular, a regional radar facility, Alexandria, actually has a statutory line, a line of statutory code that says we will spend $1.5 million in 05 and 06 to make that happen. And the FAA in Washington is not quite ready to pull the trigger on that project yet. So there's about $1.5 million there that we have to undo statutorily, but we'll fix this. Now, this is specific only to this fund. Your larger global question about how we fix deficits and funds, I can't speak to that, but only to this one, just for some aid and comfort to this committee as we'll fix this.
So in a sense, we have $1.2 million, let's say, sitting in this fund, but we're obligated, at least under current law, to spend $1.5 million there on this facility in Alexandria, and that's why this is showing a negative $281,000.
Well, Mr. Chair, there's other things related to it, including a slowdown in revenue because of new jet purchases that have been put off, which are a major driver of revenue in this fund. So what they were expecting to get, we've missed a couple of new jets. That one went to Florida and one went to Wisconsin, for instance. And so the revenue that they were thinking they were going to get didn't materialize.
Okay. All right, Mr. Marks, go ahead. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, then at the bottom of that page, the Game and Fish Fund, some of the appropriations from this fund are direct summer statutory. This is the fund that received revenue from hunting and fishing license fees and then expenditures for various related programs, habitat, and so on. And you can see the dollar amounts there. I would mention there are a number of separate accounts within that fund. Tracking is separate for each, like deer licensing or pheasant licensing and so on. On the top of the third page, the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Fund. This is essentially the operating fund for the IRRRA or IRRRB, or I believe the name is A now.
No, agency, but it's B.
I'm sorry?
Mr. Chair, in
fact, Representative, look at me. Clear up this burning question. Is it A or B?
Well, Mr. Chair, here's the way I describe it. See, I almost went to jail for breaking the law, but bureaucrats can just do what they want. They don't go to jail. So in statute, it says IRRRB. So I would say that's the law of the land, isn't it?
But it always used to be called the IRRRB until the last couple of years ago. It started being called the IRRRA. What happened?
Well, now it's called IRRR, and we spend millions of dollars with new signs.
Pretty soon we're just going to call it IR because it's an IR agency, Independent Republican.
I won't go there, Representative Rufino. Mr. Marks.
There are appropriations out of this fund are statutory. The appropriations are in statute, and you can see the revenues and expenditures and balance forward there. The Workforce Development Fund has both direct and statutory appropriations. The revenue from the employer assessment and expenditures then for employment and training programs. And you can see this one is also relatively closely budgeted. This will be reviewed and represents Unfair Jobs and Economic Opportunity Committee.
Okay. Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Marks, how is the assessment determined if it goes up or down? Is it how much money is going out and it automatically does that, or does Representative Gunther set it in his bill, or how does that work?
Mr. Chair, Representative Seifert, I'm not sure. We'll have to get back to you on that.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, then we're into several of the transportation-related funds here. The next two together, the Municipal State Aid Street Fund, the County State Aid Highway Fund, are both funds that receive money from the Highway User Fund and its distributions to cities or to counties for highway purposes, essentially. Well, both of those, they are distributing money from the Highway User Fund. The third one, or the next one on the list, is the Trunk Highway Fund, which is the which is essentially the one funding state highways, and that also receives distribution from the Highway User Fund as well as federal funds for state highway construction. Again, you can see there is an issue with the Trunk Highway Fund in that there's not as much money coming in as was anticipated, and that will have to be dealt with in the Transportation Finance Committee this year as well. I believe expenditures are still projected at a higher level here than at the level they were projected at probably from last session. Expenditures are projected, the other way around. Revenues are at the actual levels that are, or have been revised. Expenditures are probably at the levels projected from last session or the 2003 session. Because I believe it's primarily federal revenues are lower, and I think then there's also reductions in gas tax revenue, or less revenue from gas taxes are leading to this. The Highway User Fund is the fund in which much of the gas tax, motor vehicle tax, and motor vehicle sales tax money is deposited in and distributed to the three funds that are listed above there. So in each of these cases, you're looking at some of the same dollars moving through these funds. They will come into the Highway User Fund and then go to one of the other three funds listed above. And so they're showing up in several different funds because they move through them, move through each of those funds, or several of those funds. On the top of the next page is the federal funds, and there are actually a couple. The second one there is the federal TANF fund, and it's counted separately because of different requirements on it. While we're on the federal funds, at the top of the page, I call your attention to the handout labeled D. This has more detail on federal funds, sorting them out by agency or by House committee and then agency within that. So it gives you some idea of just what the federal funds are by agency that this federal funds number makes up or is derived from.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Marks. Before Representative Mariani left, he had a question that he delegated to me under handout B, Min's Q. After you get to fiscal year 02, it's zeroed out. What is the reason for that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greiling, what's occurring there is beginning in fiscal year 2002, the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities accounts were essentially put into an enterprise fund, which is not considered part of the operating funds, and I believe that's what's going on here. I need to double check on it, but I believe the federal money the federal money is probably continuing going to Minsky, but not showing up in the fund balance anymore because the enterprise fund that is in is not considered part of the operating funds. But I need to double check on that.
Okay, go ahead, Mr. Marty.
The federal TANF fund, I would just note on that one, the primary difference there from the other federal funds is that TANF appropriations are direct appropriations under requirement in the federal law. So those appropriations are actually made by the health committee rather than they being automatically made in statute. Next one, workers' compensation fund. This, again, is revenue received from assessments, and then claims for workers' compensation are paid out of it. Most of the appropriations are statutory. A bit of explanation here, there's a note that fiscal 2003 includes a transfer of $265 million to the general fund. What doesn't show up on here is that there was this is related to the assigned risk surpluses of the late 1990s when additional money was transferred into the workers' comp fund out of the assigned risk surpluses, and the transfer out represents a portion of that assigned risk money being brought back to the general fund. So it was it's just the source of that transfer out wasn't referenced here. The next one, the environmental fund, includes a number of environmentally related and waste related accounts. Most of these are direct appropriations. And then there have been some changes in beginning in 2004. Some additional accounts were added here, moved out of the primarily out of the solid waste fund, I believe. The remediation fund is a new fund created in fiscal 2004, and it primarily replaced the solid waste fund, although there were, as I mentioned before, some accounts moved to the environmental fund. Most of the appropriations out of the remediation fund are statutory, and you can see the activity starting up in fiscal 2004 with no activity there prior to that.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Solberg.
Just for a point of clarification, so the receipts are the sales tax on garbage, is that kind of where that comes in?
Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, I believe that's a primary receipt. I believe there's also some fee revenue going into this one.
And Mr. Sherman, is it dedicated or does it have to be used for recycling programs and that type of activity that was, or that's the reason it was extended to begin with?
Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, I should check on this one too. I think that is a primary purpose. I'm not sure. The remediation fund was rewritten in the 2003 session, and I am not sure if it was broadened I'm not sure just how it was put together.
I'd like to have some little bit of history of where that goes.
Representative Osmond, do you have the answer on that or a comment?
I believe this is the fund that we have, where we aggregate the fees from different types of activities that's now used to fund the MPCA. Different departments and agencies.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Osmond, I think that's primarily the purpose at this point. Yeah.
Representative Wagenius.
Then if that is the case as you are following up, please help us with where the funds are that are set aside to clean up landfills that we were statutorily reserving money when we know that we won't have any more money coming in, but we know that we will have the obligation, and we have set money aside, and I'm not sure where that's showing up.
Mr. Chair, Representative Marks, there is a landfill fund coming up later on here.
Okay,
Mr. Marks.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Solberg and Osmond, just a note on the remediation fund. The receipts are listed as we're taking fiscal 2005 as an example, $775,000 from taxes, which may be the solid waste tax, and I'll double check that, $180,000 from departmental earnings, which would be fees primarily, $443,000 from investment income, so there's a certain amount invested there, and then $301,000 from fines and surcharges, and $21 million in an all other category, which could cover a lot of other options there. Mr. Chair, members, then at the bottom of that page and the top of the next page are two transit-related funds, the Metropolitan Area Transit Fund and the Greater Minnesota Transit Fund. These both receive a percentage of the motor vehicle sales tax, and I believe these both were started in fiscal year 2003, and you can see the expected activity there, and they're both managed with very little balance in the account, essentially expenditures matching revenues or close to it in each year. Then, Mr. Chair, members, two landfill-related funds, the Metro Landfill Contingent Fund, which does or no longer exists. It was made an account in the remediation fund in 2004 as a result of 2003 legislation. And then the Closed Landfill Investment Fund, which I believe is the one Representative Wagenius was referring to. This fund received transfers from the Solid Waste Fund, and I believe now would be receiving them from the Remediation Fund, and I should check that to update the reference there. There are no expenditures in this fund as of yet. Currently, the law states that the money in the fund can be spent only after the year 2020. The Solid Waste Fund I already mentioned as it was eliminated as a result of 2003 legislation and accounts transferred to the Remediation Fund and the Environmental Fund. The Maximum Effort School Loan Fund is the it's fund related to the Maximum Effort Program in K-12 education. This fund actually receives money that's paid back to the state by school districts to to pay off the state bonds that were issued to help school districts build facilities.
Mr. Mark, you know, why, if you go back to 2003, were the amounts, the receipts in so much larger than they are predicted to be now? Any idea?
Mr. Chair, I believe that was related to some of the changes in debt service equalization programs in school districts, where it became advantageous for school districts to pay off their maximum effort loans and take advantage of the debt service equalization programs. On the bottom of this page, the Medical Education and Research Fund, and then the top of the next page is the Tobacco Use Prevention Fund. These were both related to the tobacco endowment, but the medical education one also had revenues besides from the tobacco endowment, and activity continues in this fund. There is a note there that $575 million was transferred to the general fund in fiscal 2004, and that was the reason for the big expenditure and transfer in that year. But there are revenues in here, I believe, are primarily from federal sources at this time.
So, Mr. Chairman, is that nearly $500 million was transferred?
Mr. Chair and Representative Soberg, yes. $575 million from this one and $459 from the Tobacco Use Prevention Fund on the top of the next page. It was over $1 billion transferred from the tobacco endowment to the general fund.
So we transferred from medical education and research to the general fund. Okay. I knew that, but I just wanted to clarify it.
And then, Mr. Chair, on the top of the next page, the Tobacco Use Prevention Fund also it transferred to the general fund, and there is no activity in this fund at this point. The second one on that page that we've talked about a little bit, the Northeast Minnesota Economic Protection Fund, also known as the Douglas J. Johnson Economic Protection Trust Fund. This is for economic rehabilitation rehabilitation in the description twice of Northeastern Minnesota related to taconite mining, and revenue is from a portion of the taconite taxes. This is also treated as an endowment fund, and that the expenditures, I believe, are limited, and I am not exactly sure what the limit is, but there's a limit on the amount of money that can be expended each year, I believe.
Mr. Marks, or maybe Representative Rugavina, do you know what the $1 million we are expending is going for? Has it transferred out?
Mr. Chair, we spent $7.5 million matching 21st century money at the Mesaba Nugget project in on the North Shore, which now may be in White Lakes, and again that was the same match for them again the next year, and then the 1.8 was I believe for Minnesota Steel Industries.
I think what the 7.5 is for the Mesaba Nugget, and I think the 7.4 maybe Minnesota Steel Industries one. I'm not sure. But
all right.
But it is used.
But it's being used. This is research money. This is not money going to the IRRB or A or administrative costs or something else like that.
The fact is that we were spending our money. Remember when you said that if you come up with a real good project, you'd find the money to replace the 21st Century Mineral Fund money?
Yeah.
Was stolen?
You didn't.
Well, you didn't tell me there was a real good project.
There is a good project. I did too tell you. I said I need $32
million. Well, here's some money right here. I just found it.
Yeah, but in someone else's pocket.
What do you mean someone else's pocket?
It's like the governor found some money for North Star in someone else's pocket.
Oh, yeah. No, this is what this money is for. We'll talk about it more, I'm sure. Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, members, the next two, the gift fund and the endowment fund, are both to essentially hold gifts that the state agencies receive for certain purposes. The gift fund are gifts that are received and can be spent. Somebody donates $20,000 and it can be spent. The endowment fund is somebody may donate $20,000 and say the interest off it can be spent each year. That's the distinction between them, and they're relatively small, and but there is activity, especially in the gift fund, across many agencies that do receive relatively small amounts of money there.
And Mr. Marsh, so these are actually gifts. We're getting $4.5 million a year in the form of gifts from what someone leaves a bequest to the state of Minnesota because they, I don't know, felt good about being a citizen or something like that?
Mr. Chair, I assume that's the case. For example, there are the Federal Academies received $27,000 in 2004. The Center for Arts Education received $665,000. The Human Services Department, $25,000. It's those kinds of dollar amounts. I don't know a lot more about them.
All right. Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Marks.
Okay, Mr. Chair, the next to last one here is the Permanent School Fund one that we discussed a little bit earlier. This is money received from the from the school fund lands primarily. If they go into an endowment, the expenditure is the investment income from that endowment, the expenditure distributed to school districts. And the balance forward does include the endowment amount or the principal amount.
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Marks, I know we had hearings on this in previous years. Are they doing a better job of managing this? We've had lots of discussions on the floor and bringing more money in for these school kids. I see the numbers are going up. Does that just get folded into the K-12 finance program?
Mr. Chair, Representative Seifert, to the first part of your question, I haven't followed up on this a great deal. Representative Sikora, I think, has been involved in. She's not here, but probably could answer that question much better than I could. As far as the second part of your question, the money is a deduction from the general education formula. So there's the amount of the general education formula, which is $4,000-some per pupil. A couple dollars of it, or I shouldn't say a couple, approximately $20 of that is actually paid from some of the school fund money, and then the additional amount is paid from the general fund. So it's part of the general education formula.
So Mr. Marks is there? I guess I always thought of this more in terms of the various parcels of land around the state and the timber earnings and stuff we get off of them. And I understand that that might be, that's where the receipts are coming from. But is there also $563 million in cash and investments somewhere that we're getting earnings off of? It's that much. All right.
Mr. Chair, yes. The principal of the fund is somewhere in that neighborhood area.
Okay. Representative Rucavina.
Chair, and for your, and I think that's Seifert's information, I don't believe the income. I think a few years back, maybe 6-7 years ago, we changed statute so we didn't have to put all of the interest income back in to the students, and we could try to build up that corpus.
Okay.
Because, and Mr. Marks then remember the number per pupil went down from like $40 to $25 or something. But I think the transfer receipts and transfers in include interest money made, because I know that you're not taking that kind of money in timber and mineral sales, which is the only income. That's probably about $7-8 million a year. The rest of it must be interest income, counted as income.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rucavina, that's correct. It's primarily, the expenditure amount represents the interest income, so the difference between the two would be additional money coming into the fund, which is primarily timber and mineral sales, probably some land sales and some small amounts from leases, agricultural and other types of leases.
So. Okay.
And then, Mr. Chair, members, the final one listed on here is the debt service fund. This represents the expenditures for paying off general obligation bond principal and interest, and this is largely a transfer from the general fund, but the expenditure occurs out of the debt service fund and is shown here separately.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rucavina.
Chair, I've added up when Mr. Marks was going through these about $1.416 million that's been transferred into the general fund from some of these. From the Health Care Access Fund is $53 million, and it says in 06. The Special Revenue Fund in 03 and 04 is $49 million. The State Airport Fund, which Representative Beard referred to, was $15 million in 03. The Workers' Comp from $265 million in 03. And then the Medical Education Research Fund and the Tobacco and Youth Prevention in 04 is over $1 billion. I also added up then Mr. Marks' statement that in 03 we took $7 million from the Health Care Access Fund, in 04, $21 million, and in 05, $239 million. I remember we took money from the Workers' Comp Fund in 02 and 01, and or 02, and then the medical education research and tobacco money, we took some money. So I'm up to about $2 billion of one-time money that we took to balance the budget. And I guess my question to you is, there's no more billions of dollars to find, so how are we going to get out of this mess that we're in? And you are much brighter than me because you are a millionaire yourself. So tell at least I heard that. So tell me, I don't know if it's true, but it's a compliment anyway for me. But how are we going to get out of this mess? Because there's no more, you know, tobacco money and workers' comp money and health care access money to take.
Well, Representative Rucavina, first of all, I think what I should say is that this time tomorrow you'll have the governor's plan on how we will deal with the issue, and we will then be having a hearing on the governor's plan a week from today in this committee. And I think there are probably some other one-time places a person could go. Whether we should do that or not is another matter. But we will, as you know, be putting together our own budget as we look at the governor's plan, and look forward to working with you on that.
Thank you.
Representative Paymar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can I just go back real quick? I know we're running out of time to the federal funds received and administered by state agencies. And on the line on the Community and School Services and Housing Finance Agency and Historical Society, why are these were these federal funds that were eliminated or...
Let's see, you're on the chart, Ms. Representative Paymar, that says federal funds received, that has the B at the top, is that right?
And administered, but yeah, it's a B chart.
Okay, and you're saying why is the housing finance one zero now?
And historical society as well as community and social and school services.
Okay, Mr. Marks, any idea?
Mr. Chair and Representative Paymar, I think there are a couple different answers. On the community and school services, that was separate. For those years when we had a separate family and early childhood committee and we were reporting it separately, that would those amounts are probably now incorporated into either education or health and human services, depending on where those particular grants or those particular federal funds went. They would follow the programs as they got moved around. So that one is simply a matter of changing the committee structure here. I believe on the Housing Finance Agency and the Historical Society, they would be not anticipating to receive federal funds in the years where there's a zero there. And I don't know the reasons for that, but they are showing up as zero in the fund balance statements.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members, and a couple other final things fairly quickly here. I have passed out an issue brief that the fiscal staff prepared back in June, relating to health care access fund, and to your question regarding transfers into the health care access fund, this is providing some more background information on the health care access fund. Then in that the handout that had the kind of the list on the front, the pages stapled together, the final pages in here provide some information on from the Department of Finance and from some work that was done on by the Legislative Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policy several years ago. Page 7 talks about state government funds and what are they, what is a fund, pages 7 and 8, and then lists the types of funds, and I won't go into that in any more detail at this point unless there are questions. And then pages 9, 10, 11, and 12 are from also from the Department of Finance's webpage, which is that inventory of funds that the Department of Finance now has on the web, and it provides some background information, and then a list of all the funds. And these funds, this list of funds goes beyond the operating funds that we were talking about today. These are essentially all the funds that are listed, including, for example, pensions ones, internal service ones within agencies, and a variety of other essentially any types of funds and the fund coding. If you're interested in pursuing it, you go to Finance's webpage and click on the fund, and you'll find a little bit more information about it.
All right. Does anyone else have any other questions for Mr. Marks? Seeing no other questions, meeting is adjourned.